Welcome to Three Cops Talk. On this podcast, three active duty police officers discuss behind-the-scenes stories and real-life accounts of what it's like to be a cop. Every episode, you'll get an inside look at the challenges and dangers they face on a daily basis, as well as the triumphs and inspirational moments that make it all worth it. If you want to understand more about the men and women who put their lives on the line for us every day, then this is the show for you. And now your hosts, Chris, Scott, and Sean.
With the recent mass migration from urban centers in the United States, there are many politicians using this as an opportunity to herald the recent drop in violent crime and homicides in cities across America. Unfortunately, the unaddressed crime and the anti-police sentiment that caused some of this urban flight and these subsequent improved statistics doesn't necessarily mean that lawlessness just went away. So on this episode, we are joined by Craig Floyd, a founder and the CEO of Citizens Behind the Badge, to discuss some of the factors impacting the rise in violent crimes in suburban and rural areas throughout the U.S.
The views and opinions expressed in this episode belong solely to the hosts and do not represent the views of any professional organization. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the show.
All right, Chris, what do you got for us, man? You're chopping at the bit, buddy. What do you got?
Scott just gets up and leaves, and I notice when he leaves, he's got a haircut, and then he sat down. He looks like the guy from Me, Myself, and Irene.
And that's the word of a Rhode Island state trooper, ma'am.
This is a little high and tight. Okay, yeah.
A little.
Yeah.
The other thing that happened since we last talked was we got our first hate mail, over 500,000 downloads, and we got our first, I'm assuming it's hate mail based upon the tenor. He's very upset with our take on the First Amendment auditors. And this particular listener was very complimentary. He really liked our nice echo chamber. He was also saying that, you know, our time was coming, and I know we all appreciate that.
Thank you.
I did send an email, and I said thank you. I said, if you have any particular things you want to talk about.
You talking to me? You talking to me?
Well, on another note, though, although a lot of major cities are claiming that violent crimes and homicides are down, some other areas of the country, actually a high percentage of the rest of this country, which is not urban, but suburban or rural, are actually seeing upticks in crime. And the group that I saw this posted through is a group called the Citizens Behind the Badge. So I reached out to their CEO. And as any good CEO, he got back to me rather quickly, which was kind of nice, and was willing to come on board and talk with us about some of this stuff, some of what Citizens Behind the Badge does in support of law enforcement, and also some of these statistics that we're talking about. So today we've got their CEO, Craig Floyd, who I'm going to let introduce himself and tell a little bit about his background and the folks at Citizens Behind the Badge, and then we'll kind of get into the guts of that from there. So, Craig, thanks for being here. We really appreciate your time.
Oh, it's my pleasure. My pleasure to be here and talk about what's happening in this country when it comes to crime and law enforcement. You know, for 34 years, I was the founding CEO of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. And during that time, we built both the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial in Washington, D.C., today, it has 23,785 names on that memorial, officers who have died in the line of duty. Hundreds are added every year, unfortunately. And then we went on to build the National Law Enforcement Museum, which tells the story of American law enforcement. It's an incredible story of service and sacrifice, a story which most Americans don't know or appreciate. And so that's why I was so thankful that we were able to complete that endeavor after a 20-year journey. It was authorized by Congress in the year 2000, and we opened the museum in 2018. The memorial was actually built in 1991. I had the good fortune of working for a man named Mario Biaggi, who was a congressman from New York City. Mario Biaggi was the most decorated cop in New York City history when he retired in 1965. Went on to serve 20 years in Congress. I was his legislative assistant for 10 of those years. And that's how I got involved in law enforcement. I'm a private citizen. I've never worn the badge, never experienced the dangerous situations that our officers have to face day in and day out. But I've met thousands of officers across this country. I believe I have probably a better understanding and appreciation of what law enforcement does from a citizen's perspective than any citizen in this nation. And that's why I was so privileged, really, to lead the Memorial Fund for all those years. I retired in 2018. Our job, as I saw it, my personal goals during that 34 years had been completed, and I stepped away, and I was enjoying life. And then all hell broke loose in May of 2020, when George Floyd died, everybody started hating on cops. So much anti-cop vitriol in this country. So many false facts and lies that were being stated about law enforcement. And I knew the truth. And so I wanted to have a voice. I wanted to get back in the game so citizens had a voice of support for law enforcement. And you didn't feel like you were out there all by yourself with lacking that appreciation and support. So I started a new group. It's called Citizens Behind the Badge. It's a nonprofit advocacy group. We're a 501c4 for those that care about those sorts of things. It means we're approved by the IRS. And now we get to lobby Congress. We get to lobby the state legislatures. We get to counter all the lies and the falsehoods about law enforcement that are being preached out there by a very small number of people, but they seem to be making a lot of noise. And they need somebody to step up and say, hey, you're wrong. You don't know what you're talking about. And Citizens Behind the Badge puts out the truth every day, like we did when it came to crime in rural and suburban America. Very few people are focused on that problem. But we put out the facts and the figures. And you can go to our website at behindbadge.org and go to our facts and figures page. And you'll see so many of the facts that show what devastating effects, catastrophic effects, the defund and defame the police movement has had on the public safety in this country. We are facing a crisis, both in terms of public safety, national security. We have 40,000 fewer cops today serving America than we did 3 years ago. All right. We have fewer cops per resident of this country than we've ever had in the last 25 years. This is a problem because the criminals aren't slowing down. They're not decreasing in numbers, but the police officers are. And we have a real problem. We got to get them back and we got to recruit new ones to replace those that are leaving.
Yeah, and Craig, we thank you for doing all that work that you do to support this profession. And just, it's so important. And you hit on that one part about getting those statistics out to people so that people really know what's going on out there. I mean, people make a case for why we should have less police and how police are, you know, treat people so poorly and this and that. And then you go and look at actual people who have data and research and show. And to think, you know, we're losing that number of police officers in that period of time. And the struggles that we talk about on here all the time about recruiting new police officers. And it's a hard profession to go into as it is. It's even harder if you're trying to come into a profession or in an area of the country where it's obvious that politicians, not necessarily the people, because we know that we get feedback from people that people appreciate the work that we do. But when that rhetoric of politicians saying, oh, you know, our police are terrible, they need to be reformed and defunded, what is going to make someone want to go, even if they do have an opening for a police officer right there, who's going to want to go there and start working there and say, oh, yeah, this is where I want to spend the next 25 years?
Here's an interesting stat, too. If you look at that number, 40,000 fewer officers. There's been a study that shows for every 10 to 17 officers serving, one innocent life is saved. All right. So if you do the math, if you take out 40,000 officers and you realize that all these lives could have been saved, we've lost over 3,000 people during that period of time because of the defund and defame the police movement. It's tragic what's happened. How many innocent lives have been lost because there's fewer officers on the street keeping people safe? And we've got to do something to reverse that. And that's one of our goals at Citizens Behind the Badge.
And that kind of goes hand in hand with some of the trends. Like you, when you lived in, when you consider like the 2020, you know, HUD statistics, the Census Bureau information, 52% of Americans live in what's considered a suburban area with 21% living in rural areas. Well, when you talk to people, let's just be straight. We talk about, oh, that's a city problem. That's not my problem. People are always of that mindset. Well, we live in the burbs. That's a Chicago problem. Or we live in Jersey. That's a New York City problem. I live in Orange County. I don't worry about what happens in LA. Well, now it seems that trend, although might be dropping in the cities, is now coming out. Like people are leaving the cities and going to the suburbs. So it seems is the crime. If we could talk a little bit about how these statistics are reported, as well as some of the different places that we're getting data from now that makes this maybe a little bit more accurate, and then where are the areas we're seeing upticks?
A lot of the crime reporting that we get every year is from the Uniform Crime Report. And this is law enforcement agencies across this country reporting to the FBI as a clearinghouse for that information. And then they come out and tell us whether crime went up, whether crime went down. But unfortunately, the flaw in that system is a lot of law enforcement agencies don't participate. There's no penalty for not complying with that mandate. And so as a result, we get flawed statistics. But there is something that the Department of Justice does that I think is more accurate, a more accurate reflection of crime in America. And that's called the National Crime Victimization Survey that they do every couple of years, right? And here's what they do. They actually survey crime victims, okay? People that have had interactions with law enforcement, people that have been victims of crime. And they ask them to tell us your story, you know, and as a result of that survey that they did for 2022, which is the most recent numbers that we have, there was a 21% increase in robbery rates in the suburbs in 2022. 21% spike in robbery in the suburbs. Rural America was even worse. Rural robbery rates spiked 44% in 2022 compared to the prior year. And gun violence also rose in those areas. In fact, there were 66,000 more reported cases of gun victimizations in rural areas in 2022 compared to the year before. And that's a rate that hadn't been seen since 1997. Oh. All right. So if you live in suburban America or rural America, you've got some real problems that are occurring there. The trends are not going in a favorable direction. And here's the real telling statistic. Violent crime committed by strangers. All right. It rose in all geographic areas. In urban America, crime victimization by strangers was up 37%, 73% spike in the suburbs, and it was up more than double, 102% increase in rural America. That was crime committed by strangers against victims in rural America. This should be shocking to everybody that lives in suburban America, rural America, and of course, urban America. We've all seen the stats there and how, you know, in D.C., where I live, the D.C. area, crime last year, violent crime went up 39%. The number of hijackings more than doubled. And the average age of a carjacker in D.C., 15 years old. Youth crime in this country is out of control. Parents are not doing their job, and there's not enough police officers around to make up for that bad parenting. So as a result, I just did a letter to the editor, which was published today, coincidentally, and it was about youth violence and truancy. Basically, in D.C., 37% of all D.C. students don't go to school. There's a 37% truancy rate. And recently, there was a 12-year-old and two 13-year-old girls that beat a disabled senior citizen to death, all right, in a brutal attack. And it turns out that all three of the girls were habitually truant, and one girl had not attended one class all year in 2024. You got to ask yourself, what the hell are the parents doing? Bringing these kids into the world and letting them run loose.
You guys met my dad. Could you imagine telling my dad, I'm not going to school? I think I would tell him that on a Tuesday and wake up on a Friday.
The juvenile justice process is like, get these kids reformed, get them back out in the streets, get them back in environments that they're more stable with and things like that. What we're ignoring the fact is these environments they're going back into are not very stable. Now let's do this with violent criminals that are of age. One of the questions I have to follow on from this is, what do you think, Craig, are some of the issues as to why that spike is happening in the burbs?
Well, I think a lot of urban Americans, urban citizens during COVID were looking for environments that got them out of the city. They were looking for places, houses in the suburbs, houses in rural areas where they felt safe. Unfortunately, crime has followed them to those areas. We're seeing a lot more gang activity in suburban areas in this country of ours. There's a lot of drug problems in rural America, meth especially. And these are real serious problems that create crime that goes with the drug crisis that this nation of ours is facing. So these are just, you know, it almost is common sense when you think about it, that you know, as drug trafficking goes out of the urban areas into suburban America, into rural America, you're going to have violence, you're going to have crime, and drug addiction, alcoholism. These are all problems that we used to think were more urban type problems. Now those problems have gravitated to suburban and rural America, and we can't ignore it. And the problem is we don't have enough law enforcement professionals now in those areas to deal with this rise in crime.
Not only do you not have the amount of police officers, you don't have people that want to prosecute. And then you have people that want to fudge the numbers. It seems more that people are trying to, you know, hide the pee under a different shell that's not even in the game.
Yeah, well, and those statistics are some alarming numbers. But again, back to what happens here, and I'm speaking in the Chicagoland area, and we all know people that work in Cook County and Chicago and that area. These crime statistics are easily manipulated because they just don't charge what these crimes necessarily are. There are lots of burglary to motor vehicles that meet the elements of the crime of burglary to motor vehicle in Cook County and Chicago, which is a felony. Yet a lot of folks get only charged with a criminal trespass to vehicle, which is a misdemeanor. So it's not that the crimes aren't being committed. They're not being straight, these politicians, when they're telling you that these violent crimes are down. They're not necessarily down. It just, for those agencies that do report those crime statistics, when you have prosecutors that don't charge those appropriately as the crime, the elements of what meets that crime, then it looks like, oh, well, yeah, look, we have less violent crime. Look, we had 100 people that got shot, and maybe that's a felony gun charge, but we only charge those folks with a battery that's a misdemeanor. So that's a big part of where that's in play. And that that's not the kind of stuff that you're hearing about.
And you raise an excellent point, Scott, which is during COVID, we saw big increases across the board, especially in urban crime. So everybody was so focused on that. But you raise a good point about how the departments don't necessarily give you the actual statistics that we would like to see and hear. But this crime victimization survey goes right to the heart of the problem. These are the crime victims that are telling you what happened to them. Right. There's no fudging that. They're going to tell you whether they were robbed, whether there was guns involved, et cetera. So that's why I love this National Crime Victimization Survey. I'll tell you another number that came out of that survey in 2022. There were, I believe, 53.8 million interactions between law enforcement professionals and the public during 2022. And they surveyed those people that were crime victims or that had interactions with the law enforcement. Not all of them were criminals. And they found that of the 8 million people that had interactions with law enforcement, only 1% said that there was any police misconduct involved. All right. That was a telling question and a great answer, which basically supported everything I've always believed, which is most cops out there are doing their jobs professionally and properly and honorably. And yet all we hear about is a couple rogue examples where maybe cops did commit some misconduct and the media goes crazy with those stories. But the point is 99% of all the interactions with the public do not involve any misconduct by the police officers. They're doing their jobs the way they're supposed to, the way we want them to.
And I think we're seeing that with this paradigm shift of, you know, things changing and now impacting areas that historically weren't impacted by this. The whole system is set up to cater to cities. The entire system of government in this country is set up to cater to cities when it comes to representation in our federal government, as well as the voice of the people in those. And, you know, it's from electoral votes to the amount of representatives you get, things along those lines. So when the DOJ puts out things, it generally caters to the city's needs at that point. Well, very few things have been put out to deal with, to be honest with everybody here listening to this, to deal with rural and suburban policing areas. The agencies aren't big enough, but they don't have the resources. Do you think, Craig, that the DOJ, from your experience in Washington, D.C., and working there, that the DOJ, is it like a swift boat, or is it more like an aircraft carrier and its ability to kind of turn around and get things, you know, pointed in the right direction?
Oh, I think we all know the answer. Things work very slowly here in our nation's capital. I worked on Capitol Hill for 10 years and I saw it up close and personal. But you're right. I mean, I think the FBI especially would like to do a better job with reporting accurate crime information in this country. But their hands are tied because so many of the law enforcement agencies, state and local, there's 18,000 federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies in this country. And not all of them, by a large margin, submit their crime numbers to the FBI. So we have to weigh that when we hear the statistics coming out. Most of the major urban departments do submit that information. And that's why our crime stats for urban America are probably more accurate than they might be for suburban and rural. If you have a small law enforcement agency, say in rural America, five officers or fewer, a lot of them do. The majority of agencies in this country have fewer than 10 officers, right? So those agencies don't have the manpower to sit down and compile crime records and send them off to the FBI, you know, fill out hundreds of pages of forms, forget it. They're not going to do it. So that's why our numbers for rural and suburban America are not going to be as accurate as we would like. And that's why I love this crime victimization survey, because that really gets right to the root of what's happening in rural and suburban America. And it tells us that it's not good, that we have a public safety crisis that nobody has been talking about.
And I noticed, like, from one of the different, like, the kind of the core values that are listed for your organization is one of those points is about the knee jerk and irresponsible reaction sometimes of these local governments to defunding the police, you know, based on just small incidents. And Illinois is the perfect example of that, where we passed a lot of legislation here, not very favorable to police officers, and then, you know, followed that up with, you know, initiating this no cash bond program in Illinois. And these things are just, you feel like as a police officer, sometimes these things are just passed in the middle of the night with no discussion. And who are the people that are at the table, you know, talking about this? And they might seem like a feel good kind of, you know, reaction to something, but then what is the long term, you know, what happens with this in the long term? And I can tell you, I shouldn't say I can't wait, but I'm scared to see maybe some of the statistics that come out after a year or two of this no cash bond stuff, that, and especially when it comes to your victimization studies, and see what those numbers are like. And I think people are going to be shocked. And then by that time, those politicians that have been a big part of putting this into play, they're long gone. No one cares, whatever, at that point.
When you saw it in Chicago, the big thing that's now that's out there now, the kid that got shot by the cops, he was out on a gun charge. He was out on a retail theft charge. He was out and he got himself and he shot at the police and got himself killed. That's what's going to happen. And just like you said, Scott, like that's like 10 years down the road, 5 years down the road. What is it going to be like?
But what's particularly frustrating too, and people don't focus on this, is prior to 2020, when George Floyd died and the defund and defame the police movement was launched, in 2019, the records that had been kept for 50 years, let's say, something along those lines, 2019 was the safest year that we had seen in recorded history. All right. When it came to violent crime was at a record low level, because cops were doing their jobs better than ever, right? I mean, you all live it. I've only seen it from afar, but I can tell you what I know. They're better trained. They're better educated. They're better equipped. And all of these things, more technology available. Law enforcement was at its peak in terms of great performance, and crime was way down. America was safe because of that. And then all of a sudden, George Floyd dies. One cop, you know, commits an act that most of us would totally be appalled at. A man dies, and it was on video. And so now we've got to blow up law enforcement. Law enforcement was terrible. We've got to reinvent it, reform it. And everybody forgot all about how safe it was in 2019 and how it had been safer every year since 1991, when crime in this country peaked. Yeah. All right. And we kept getting safer and safer. And I kept saying it's because we have better prepared law enforcement officers than ever before. They're doing a better job than ever before. And yet we forgot all about that during the defund and defame the police movement. And here we are with terrible crime rates and a lot fewer cops. And we need more.
Well, in your infinite wisdom, Craig, as a CEO, what would you do if you were king for a day to address this situation?
I think the answers are pretty simple, and we talk about it a lot here. One, we need to pay our police officers more. All right, they're doing a job that's incredibly dangerous, incredibly difficult, especially today. It's gotten tougher than ever. So we need to raise the salary levels for law enforcement in this country so we can recruit more officers and retain the ones that we have, the good ones that we need, because they're the veterans. They know how to do the job. And they need to train the younger guys coming in. We got to get tougher with criminals in this country. Enough with this no cash bail, enough with this district attorneys that don't want to prosecute criminals, want to give them second, third, fourth chances after they've committed violent act after violent act. Repeat violent offenders in this country commit 75% of the violent crime. We know who they are. They've already raised their hand and told you. I have a rap sheet a mile long. I keep beating up people. I commit domestic violence. I rob people. Those people need to be behind bars for long periods of time. And we've got to make, you know, the politicians, and this is important. You alluded to it earlier, and I appreciated the thought. And that is the law enforcement officers serving today, I think, know that the public is behind them. That surveys show that 76% of the American people highly respect the men and women who serve their communities in law enforcement, all right? But it's the politicians that are reluctant to give them that voice of support. So we've got to do better in voicing that support from the highest levels of government in this country. We're working with Senator J.D. Vance from Ohio. Great guy, loves law enforcement, wants to do even more to help them. And so I'm working with his staff. We got a resolution enacted, SRES 218, that was introduced this past year, and I'm hopeful it'll pass this year. It expresses strong support for law enforcement in this country. It calls for full funding of law enforcement, and it condemns the defund and defame the police movement. We need more politicians like J.D. Vance who are willing to step up and put themselves on record in support of law enforcement, because that'll help us retain the good cops that we have and help recruit the ones that we need to take Absolutely. Their place.
Well, Craig, we definitely appreciate your time today, and it's great that you're out there and there are ordinary folks that have served at the level and seen things at the level, at the highest level of our land, that, you know, make us feel like people care about it. Because there's a lot of times when you're doing the job, you don't think that that's out there.
For the representatives that you work with that want to do it, and I feel bad for them because it's an uphill battle for them too, because there's so many people out there that want to do the wrong thing just to get the votes. And it's a shame.
I agree. And by the way, there's a great proposal that one of our law enforcement advisory council members came up with recently. We're meeting with Senator Vance to go over it next week. It calls for a LEOSA reserve force. All right. And you all, of course, know LEOSA. That's for retired officers. If you're mm-hmm. retired and you continue to keep up with your firearm training and you get certified every year, you can carry a firearm anywhere in this country. That was passed in 2004 because so many jurisdictions and states, there might be a security crisis like 9/11, something along those lines, or a public safety crisis. We need those trained officers who are now retired to step up and help. But they're not organized. And what we're proposing, Art Gordon, a member of our council, is proposing that we create a reserve force very similar to the military reserves that we have. The National Guard that are called upon and are available when a crisis occurs, right? They're not really doing anything in the meantime, but when needed, they're called upon and they're ready to go. We need the same thing now with a police force that's in reserve because so many of our agencies are shorthanded. If God forbid another 9/11 or October 7th attack like what happened in Israel occurred here in the United States. Are we going to be prepared for that? The answer is no, unfortunately. Yeah. Right. So we need more officers. So that's just one more option that we're now proposing as well.
That's great. Yeah, thank you for all your support of our profession. We really do appreciate it.
Yeah, and Craig, could you let everybody know all the websites where they could donate, follow, help out, sign petitions, whatever? Could you let that out there again for me?
I appreciate that. It's behindbadge.org. Very simple, behindbadge.org. And on there, you'll find not only a button where you could make a donation. We're a nonprofit, so we rely solely on contributions from the public. But there's also a declaration of support banner on our website. If you click on that, you can sign it virtually. And then we're going to send that to the law enforcement agencies in your community to let them know that, hey, thousands of people in Chicago, Illinois, or in New York City or wherever are supporting you. And they've declared their support in this formal way. So that's just one more way people can not just give us money, but hopefully sign that declaration of support. So-
Great. Awesome.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Craig. Please keep up the work and let us know what we can do to help out. This will all be on the internet. And please, everybody out there, please go to the website and help Craig out as much as you can. Donate, because everything that you give really helps get the word out there about we do need more police. And by having more police, we have more people to talk to, which come back to the show. And we could build this bridge between civilians and police to try and make the world a better place. If you have any questions or you have an idea for show, please email us at 3copstalk@gmail.com. Go to our website, get our old episodes, and you can also leave an email there, 3copstalk.com. And also, please go to where you get your podcast and leave a rating review and download. Right, that would be great. In the meantime, everybody have a blessed day. We'll talk to you next week.
And in this show's epilogue, we started the episode discussing Craig's work on the police memorial in Washington, D.C. So it's only fitting that we close by taking the time to honor the three officers whose names that will be added to the monument. Officer Joseph McKinney of the Memphis Police Department, Officer Michael Jensen of the Syracuse, New York Police Department, and Lieutenant Michael Husak of the Onondaga County Sheriff's Office in New York. They all made the ultimate sacrifice in being murdered during the performance of their duties this past week. Let's try to honor their memories through our thoughts and our prayers for their families, friends, police agencies, and the overall profession. And remember to say their names.